Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to call the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee to order. We're no longer a division. We're a committee again. So welcome, everybody. Welcome back. This is our first meeting of the 2020 edition of the Transportation Committee. I'm Frank Hornstein, the chair. We do have a quorum present, and our first order of business is to introduce a new staff person that we have with us today, a new committee legislative assistant, Dan Dodge. Please welcome Dan. He replaces Lindy Salmick. Some of you may have met Lindy over the interim. She is now the CLA at Government Operations. So anyone on GovOps, you'll see a familiar face there. So we'll have the same rules that we had last year. This is really just a continuation of the first year of the biennial session. And we've put in your packets just as a refresher, the rules, primarily, again, 24 hours ahead of time with amendments, et cetera. And since we're no longer a division of Ways and Means, we'll be passing we're still a committee. Actually, we are still a committee of the division of the Ways and Means Committee, but we're going to be functioning more like be more of a traditional committee without that back and forth referral process. So I stand corrected on that.
I stand confused.
Okay. Do you have?
Well, so what is the status of bills that are in Ways and Means today, or as of the end of last year? Are they?
They're still in that committee. It goes back to the Committee of Origin if we want to, or goes back one committee, which is, I think, the rule. We have all of this explained in the member packets, but the rules on where bills sit after the interim is that remains in place as well. So if you have some questions, please maybe direct them to House Research. Mr. Burris, do you have I think specifically to Representative Torkelson's question, if a bill is in Ways and Means now, is it still in Ways and Means?
Mr. Chair and members, yes, a bill that's in Ways and Means is in Ways and Means, and the committee actions and floor actions are the same as they would be with bills from last year, kind of a standard process from that standpoint.
Thank you.
Okay, so with that, members, we do have one item of business today, or two, including the approval of the minutes. So Representative Petersburg, we do have some minutes still from last year that were corrected. And we got those to you ahead of time, so just want to make sure you've read those and move them.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In reading over them, it was amazing how many times we had to recess and come back at the end of the session to do our work, because we did a lot of work last year. But with that and the changes that were made, Mr. Chair, I would like to approve March 7th, 14th, 21st, and April 4th minutes.
Thank you. The motion is before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Representative Petersburg is our designated minutes guy. His attention to detail, we always appreciate it. Thank you. So we have one item of business before the committee, and that is a transportation transit safety update for Metro Transit, and then the bill related to that by Representative Tabke. I wanted members and those in the public that are following this to know that we will not be taking action on this bill today. We are laying it over. The main reason for that is that we just received a fiscal note and literally within the last few minutes. And I just don't think that's a good process to move a bill with significant fiscal implications without the committee having a chance to review that fiscal note. Representative Kosnick.
Mr. Chair, will we be have the fiscal note explained to us since we just received it?
We could as part of the discussion of the bill. What we're going to do is spend about the first hour or so hearing from the Met Council. We have the chair and the general manager of Metro Transit with us. I know the committee will have questions for them. We will have Representative Tabke then present his bill, including the discussion of the fiscal note. We'll hold off on member questions, Representative Tabke's bill, so we can make sure that members of the public who wanted to testify and have a chance to testify, and then we'll, you know, take this bill up, you know, when we're ready to, perhaps in a week to 10 days from now. And then we'll have the more full, robust committee discussion with the author and amendments and however else we normally handle bills. So thank you, Representative Kosnick. Yes, Representative Torkelson.
As the commissioners present to and other staff represent this first section of the hearing, can we ask that question?
Absolutely, yeah. All so right. That's why we've set aside about an hour for this. If it takes less than an hour, fine, but, you know, I think this, I know the committee will have lots of questions of the Metropolitan. Welcome, Mr. Marble. The committee will have questions, and we want to set aside enough time for those. Okay, so I'd like to now call on the chair of the Metropolitan Council, Charlie Zelli, and members, an important development took place during the interim. There is now a new chair of the Metropolitan Council, and we're very pleased to welcome back Mr. Charlie Zelli. He is no stranger to this committee, as he was the MnDOT commissioner under Governor Dayton. And we just appreciate so much your public service, that you've come back to serve the state. I'm very, very pleased. I can think of no more able person to step into this role than you, Mr. Zelli. And of course, you have a background in transit. You call yourself a bus guy, and now you really are a bus guy and other things. So a train guy, a wastewater treatment guy, a housing guy.
A parks
guy. So welcome, Mr. Zelli, and please state your name for the record. And again, while I'm sure that the committee has many questions about the Met Council, a number of topics, we're confining our conversation with Mr. Zelli today to the issue of transit safety. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. And for the record, my name is Charlie Zelli. I am the new chair of the Metropolitan Council, and it is my great honor to be back in the Capitol. It is though I never left. I love seeing familiar faces, friends, and in particular about what interests me most, not just transportation, but the livability and the economic prosperity for all Minnesotans in this region. And I think Metropolitan Council is a great fit for me, and I am really looking forward to serving the state in this way. I'm joined by Wes Kustra, who's the general manager of Metro Transit, and our chief of the Metro Transit Police, Eddie Frizzell, and I feel like we have a great representation about this particular issue, which is safety, overall safety of the transit system. I have to have some opening comments and some kind of explanation a little about what Met Transit has been doing, some of the initiatives we set in motion, and some aspirations and thoughts and some initiatives that we would like to move forward with that would require legislation. So I'll first off say that in my 35 years as a transportation professional, that really is Jefferson Bus Lines. We all know that's a 14-state inner-city transit system. My years as commissioner of MnDOT, every one of those organizations' safety was the highest priority. I mean, it was stated in the values, it was stated in the culture. When you have a workforce that is actively working on highways in the middle of a freeway, you don't just think you're safe, you actually practice at all times what can you do to maintain a safe environment. And I know that safety culture does not just happen. It happens with resources, it happens with intention, it has to happen transparently and with great humility. because good ideas about safety comes from anywhere within an organization and anywhere outside of an organization. So I have to say where we are at the very top of my comments with MetTransit is not where we can be, where we should be. In fact, it's unacceptable. There is an atmosphere that people are experiencing. You've heard about it. I've heard about it. I've experienced it. And we need to not just up our game, but to set a standard that we can achieve with your help, with our intention and management, but also the partnership of many other organizations, both in the state and at every level of government and our civic partners. There's incidences over the past few weeks which are frightening. They're horrible, they're tragic, and they're disruptive. They're disruptive to our own employees, they're disruptive to the traveling public, and it gives an impression, a false impression, that riding a train or a bus is somehow taking your life in your hands. That is not true, but it is not a reputation that we can accept. But there's enough reality about the kind of atmosphere of danger that we need to get our minds around and correct. The point, and I think it was almost best said by some of our own train operators who are in the back of the room with us today, that it isn't just one thing. It's not just increased transit police. It's not just surveillance. It's not just the presence of eyes and ears, which is what we're going to be talking about. It's funding the entire system. We need to have a well-operating system with enough of the resources and the ability to do it right. I know that from running a bus system. You get behind on a safety culture, and it's harder to catch up. We're going to have to do that, and we're going to do that. But to maintain a operating system is kind of at the forefront of our challenge. I come at this as a bus operator. We talk a lot about Metro Transit in terms of our expansion, our current $2 billion expansion, other kind of bus rapid transit that we think will be essential for the economy of our metro region. The livability and the interconnection of people to their jobs, people to schools, people to their health care. The future, in fact, not the future, the present, is really relies upon our interconnected transit system to maintain this economy. So it makes it essential, not just for MetTransit, it's for the livability and the economy of the metro region that we love. So mobility being the backbone, we need to be committed to maintaining the accessibility for all Minnesotans. And I'm going to touch on some of the complex issues that we're facing, but I just want to quickly tell you what we've been doing over the past year, particularly the past month, so that we you know some of the extra initiatives that we've been taking in the area of safety. We have last year dramatically increased our police presence. I get a lot of emails that say that is not true, but I've also got a lot of emails that said that I've never seen a MnDOT snow truck on a snowy day. I can assure you the trucks are out, and I can assure you the transit police are on the train cars and in the buses. But we're spread around a big system. We have, and our general manager can tell you, about 850 buses, 90 train cars. I'm listening. So there's no way with our current resources to have a police presence in every car, but we should be visible, and we're going to talk about ways to increase our visibility even more. We've expanded our plain clothes police officers. They're also focusing on a lot more than those that don't pay fares. They're focusing on criminal behavior. They're focusing on petty criminal behavior. And frankly, smoking on buses, smoking on trains, smoking, drinking, drug use, you know, they're all kind of happening in ways that we have to kind of set a better standard of conduct. This is not an equity issue. This is not an issue that's focused on any population. This is focused on just everybody to maintain safety. And we talk about safety, and I'll say this now, I'll say it later. We need safety for everybody. We need safety for the most vulnerable in our populations who use our transit. We need safety for students. So another initiative that we've expanded is our Text for Safety program. We've expanded the hours, we expanded the staff. By being able to text for help also requires faster response times. And I know Chief Frizzell can talk about that. But for that, we needed to expand the people. We've taken Met Council approval toward investing in a real-time video surveillance on our train cars. That is something that we know will, with additional surveillance, additional monitoring, can make a huge difference. We've had cameras, but they are delayed. They're more keep a record. We have live cameras on the platforms in many of our stations. And I witnessed an event that struck me as how effective it is when in our control room, a video camera show we were looking at, somebody was actually paid for and was about to give themselves an injection of heroin. And the controller took the loudspeaker and actually came right out on the platform and said, you can't do that on our platform. And that actually startled this person. And they put it all back in the bag and left. But you know, cameras and surveillance and just kind of monitoring actually makes a difference. It's not just a big brother or aunt. It's a opportunity to maintain the fact that this is not an anonymous, this is a public space that you should feel safe. The real-time cameras will have better resolution. They'll allow dispatchers to not only see what's going on, but be able to focus in when there's a text or a report to know exactly what is going on with that person and do real-time apprehension. Instead of the bus or the train stopping, they'll be able to track whoever that perpetrator is and get the transit police to respond in a timely manner. In a moment, the general manager is going to talk a little bit more about the detail and about some of our efforts. But it's important to know that we're not talking about a few rotten apples. We're talking about a culture of safety. And it's a complicated issue. It's a complex issue and sometimes tragic results. I went out on the train on my first week on the job late into the evening with the Commissioner of Housing and went out to the various stations. And you see the number of most vulnerable unsheltered homeless using Metro Transit stations as a place actually to be safe. And kind of interviewing some, and I was part of the point in time survey, and some of the people I talked to said, I don't want to go to the shelter. I don't feel safe in the shelter. I feel safer here because we have transit police and others. And so there's a complicated issue about the homelessness, about places to go. The Walz administration has committed significant amounts of attention and funds. We at the Met Council have committed $1 million toward immediate action of finding shelter for those that are unsheltered toward a Minnesota Housing Fund. There's been significant support from other family foundations, the Polads and the Schultzes as two in particular, to create some more immediate solutions. But it's gnarly, difficult, complex social issue. These are not criminals. Sometimes the most vulnerable are victims. Sometimes they're perpetrators. Sometimes you can't tell. I couldn't tell going through the train and the station who's a good egg and who's a bad egg. And later that evening, about an hour later, after I left and went home at 1 in the morning, one homeless person, somewhat deranged, attacked another. That other killed with a knife. The perpetrator was in the news. That was one of the tragic things that happened. And what is startlingly poignant for me is that I remember those people. They were sitting on benches. This isn't a statistic. This isn't a personal story. It was a very real human event. And I think our homeless action team, which is another new initiative from our Metro Transit, which Chief Fazell can describe, but we have actually got now a dedicated group that is working with some of our most vulnerable to transfer them toward permanent housing. We actually, in Met Council, have a housing authority. We got approval from HUD for 156 housing vouchers for our transit riders. And we're actually not just kicking them off the train. Many have paid for tickets. We want to bring them to actual homes. And we've actually been effective with half of those vouchers, and we're just working on the next half. Would those by themselves solve the issue? They won't. But it shows that with initiative and with the leadership of our homeless action team, we can actually make a result in a very humane and thoughtful way. I have been an active participant in my first 4 weeks in the Interagency Council on Homelessness, led by our Lieutenant Governor. And I'm raising the issue of safety, not just homelessness, but safety for homeless and for the public, because sometimes it's hard to tell what's criminal and what's just poverty. And poverty is not illegal. And we have to stress that this is not targeted toward vulnerable people in a negative way. It's targeting all the Minnesotans who use our system to be able to feel comfortable. I want to just touch a little bit on Representative Tabke's bill, in fact, our proposal to reclassify the penalty for not paying a fare. The reason why is because what we're doing now is not working. And I've gotten a lot of pushback and emails and voicemails from those who are saying I'm being soft on crime. Well, actually, we're not. We actually want to enforce paying fares. We want to enforce it in a better way, in a more effective way. And it's startling to me that we've had 5,000 warnings, 1,500 citations last year. Only 45 of those people actually paid fines, because the prosecutors are looking at this criminal offense and they're saying, I'm not going to go after that citation when I have real crimes and robberies, assaults, when this is for just non-payment of $2.50. So the idea of making an administrative citation is that we will just more effectively be able to comply, enforce our fare policy, not just with our police, but also, and whether you call them ambassadors or conductors or whatever we call them, the idea is to have additional people with Metro Transit uniforms being able to both set a behavioral standard, to be welcoming, to not be threatening, be able to check fares, to actually give citations, and like parking tickets, we can go through collection agencies and actually collect those fines. So the idea of reclassification in this bill is not to back away, but actually to lean into enforcement in a way that's more effective. And I know that'll be a subject of debate, and we'll be happy to participate in that debate with both figures and our own thoughts and experiences. There are other cities, and I know that people have asked if there's studies. I'm not aware of studies. I'm aware of other cities that have reclassified the fines, and Southeastern Pennsylvania Transit Authority has put that policy in place. Seattle, all of King County, has now made it more like a parking ticket, less of a criminal offense. Portland, Oregon has as well. I know the governor of Massachusetts has proposed it for the MTA in Boston. There's a number of others that are looking at it. So we're obviously be interested in seeing how that works. We don't want to wait. We think that there's an opportunity for doing even more work on safety We are actually open and interested in Representative Torkelson's bill to do a study. We think that we should be studying it, and we'd be interested in talking more about that. We think there's some initiatives we shouldn't wait. We think there's a sense of urgency, and there should be a sense of urgency for us to set safety as the highest priority, highest value, and then do what we can thoughtfully to create that culture, because we know safety cultures do not happen with good intention. They happen with thoughtful action and with partners. So we'll be reaching out to partners, not just at the state government, but county governments, social service agencies, other police forces. We know that this is a community problem, not just a Met Transit problem. We somehow become a poignant example of it, but we know that it's everywhere. So we look forward to engaging in a continuing conversation about how we can improve. I know Wes Kostra wants to repeat a lot of what I said. No, you're going to, Lucy, you're going to give us a little bit more a fact behind what we're doing and fill in all the things that I didn't say, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Zelli, and members. Once Mr. Kostra finishes his presentation, then we'll go to member questions. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Kostra.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein and members of the committee. I want to just start by saying we know that people expect to feel welcome, comfortable, and safe on trains and buses, and I expect that. My leadership team expects that. Chief Rizzell expects that, and all of Metro staff expect that. Providing a welcoming and a safe and welcoming transit environment, as the chair said, must be our top priority, and it is our top priority. Since becoming the Metro Transit General Manager 1 year ago, I can tell you that I have allocated more time and resources toward improving the conditions and safety of our light rail service than any other single issue. There are real and significant challenges in the communities we serve that spill into our light rail environment. Crime is increasing in the communities that we provide. Unsheltered homelessness is increasing in the communities that we serve. This means that the presence of crime and homelessness is increasing on transit, because transit is a community service. Transit provides its service through those communities. Providing a safe and reliable community service, one that is vital to our region's economy, is both transit's tremendous value and it's transit's tremendous challenge. And I'm going to go over some things that that we've done over the last year, and what we started doing beginning in 2020. If it repeats some of what Chair Zelli said, then I'm just going to suggest it's a point worth repeating. In 2019, we've made a number of new investments to address the conditions and safety of our services. We invested to improve the upkeep of our rail cars and transit facilities. We increased the number of rail car cleaning staff by eightfold, so that now today, every time a train completes its run, either at Union Depot, at Mall of America, or at Target Field, that train is clean unless it's behind schedule and needs to move on quicker. We have added 16 staff to clean platforms and maintain our service facilities. And I'll say, as a result of these investments, the complaints about the upkeep and maintenance of our rail cars has been reduced by half. We've increased resources dedicated to our homeless action team to address the growing issue of transit being used as a homeless shelter. Chair Zelli mentioned the relationship with the Metropolitan Council HRA. That partnership has resulted in over 100 individuals who have previously used transit as shelter to now receiving services in real homes and with real services. We've also reached agreements with Ramsey County and Catholic Charities to dedicate shelter beds to Metro Transit referrals. But the number of unsheltered homeless is increasing in our communities, and that presence still continues on transit today. And as was already mentioned, even when there are beds available, we have some unsheltered homeless choosing transit as their place of preference. In 2019, we also made significant investments to specifically address concerns of security and safety. We added a total of $850,000 in one-time funds to our police department's base budget. This was one-time money because that's what we have to work with. That money bought about an additional 10,000 police hours. Those police hours were directed towards crime hotspots that were identified through crime analytics and crime data. That included both bus and rail hotspots like Brooklyn Center Transit Center, like the Lake Street platform, like the Chicago Lake Transit Center, Central Station here in St. Paul, and others. We also doubled the number of staff available to receive texts for safety contacts so that we could expand hours and improve response times. I'll also mention that through the targeting of the additional police hours, we added approximately 7,000 hours of police presence on light rail service. In 2020, we're adding new resources and effort to what we've already started in 2019. That includes, as was mentioned, real-time video cameras for all of our 90-plus rail cars. That will be a significant multiplier of our capacity to monitor light rail services and facilities. We're adding two additional positions to our homeless action team to connect more people who are unsheltered to services that will benefit them. And in beginning in January, Chief Frizzell changed how police officers are deployed to ensure that more police time is spent on the light rail cars rather than in squad cars. And we've seen excellent results in just the first month of January on that. He's deployed both uniformed and plainclothes officers, and we've seen a significant uptick in citations and a significant uptick in arrests comparing January 2020 with January 2019. Also in January, I authorized Chief Frizzell one-time resources of $150,000 a month or $1.8 million a year over his base budget. The source of these additional resources, and they are one-time, is the operator shortage. We are seeing savings from our operator shortage that we're trying to solve. That's important for us to solve, so I'm hoping that those savings do not continue because we need them to provide reliable service on the street. But we're trying to take advantage of those saved funds and direct them towards safety and security on our light rail service. This doubles the amount of additional resources we provide to policing in 2019 and will provide more than 20,000 additional policing hours that will be used to target light rail service. That includes both uniformed and plainclothes officer presence and will target both crime and code of conduct violations like smoking, possession of alcohol, harassment, use of profane language, and loud music. The Chief Frizzell has told me that these resources are sufficient to max out the capacity of his current police force. And what that maxing out the capacity assumes is that part-time officers will have the opportunity for full-time hours. It also assumes that full-time officers can work all the overtime that our officers can reasonably and safely accept. Chair Zelli has already called your attention to the administrative citations bill. There was an administrative citations bill introduced last year at the governor's request as well. That's really both to decriminalize or to change the penalty for fare evasion in a manner that really makes it so we can enforce that requirement better. But I want to say it also puts a presence on our services that we don't have today. The way that bill is constructed, it begins to phase in an assumption of 5% fare evasion, fare checks growing to 10%, and through that period of time of growth, it will begin with 35 new fare checkers or ambassadors and grow to 90, to nearly 90 fare checkers and ambassadors, and that creates a presence on our light rail service, an official presence on our light rail service, because we know we can't simply police our way out of it. Those fare ambassadors will have a connection with our police officers. If they observe things that need to be addressed, there will be ways for those fare ambassadors to alert our control centers and dispatch police to those situations. And we believe that through real-time video, that through the additional police officer deployments, that through fare ambassadors, those all equate to more eyes and ears on our transit service. And that's what we need to ensure a secure service. I'll mention again that we have a lot of real estate to cover. We have the 90 rail cars. We have the 850 buses. We have 12,000 bus stops. We have 1,100 bus shelters. We have 65 platforms throughout our system. We're not going to be at every bus stop, every shelter, every platform, every bus, every rail car. But we have to show a presence, and we have to use force multipliers and presence multipliers to achieve that end. So with that, I'll turn it back to the chair and Safer.
Thank you very much, Mr. Koistra and Chair Zelli. Taking a list, and the first question is with Vice Chair Tabney.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here. It's been good working with you on this bill as we move forward that we'll talk about in a little bit more here. But one big question that I have is that we had heard testimony the other day from operators that are having concerns about safety on trains, and everyone deserves to have a safe workplace. And so as we talk about the operator safety on the train, the thing that concerned me the most was the clearing of the trains at the end of the day, and that does not seem to me like that should be an operator job and part of that job description. What is happening to support operators, and what is going on there now in order to make sure that that is a safe environment for people at the end of the day?
Mr. Zelli.
Thank you, Chair, and Representative Tabke. Overall, I think the whole idea of operators who are not only on the front lines of our operations, but sometimes they're there by themselves. And so their safety, their peace of mind is a part of our whole safety high priority. I'm going to let General Manager West speak to this, but we're aware of some of the bad incidences. In fact, we talked or had planned to talk to some of those that testified. Some of that was from a few years ago. Some of the more recent events are under investigation. I think that has to do with stress resources, but the idea of the end of the train clearing is a subject we're now intensely reviewing. That is probably the area and the time of day that is that we're at most at risk.
Mr. Koistra.
Mr. Chair, Representative Tapke, I would just add to that that we have reviewed each one of the concerns that the operators brought before to the attention of the committee, and some of those were from one, two, 3 years back. Some of those are current. I don't minimize any of them. Certainly the issues of clearing trains at the end of the night is a real issue. It's an issue that is complicated through made more complex through the presence of people who are using transit as shelter. It's an uncomfortable situation for our operators, and we are providing police assistance throughout those lines, but we haven't always been able to provide police assistance at the right time in the right place when those trains are being cleared. And as Chair Zelli mentioned, we had already had a meeting scheduled with the operator who expressed those concerns, and that meeting was scheduled for the day following the hearing. That meeting did take place with all rail leadership and leadership from our police chief. The police chief is going to be doing a ride-along in that situation, but in terms of a practical solution, we're looking at ways that we can redeploy and reschedule officers in order to be in those places when the trains are being cleared. I'll also mention that I've asked that this issue has raised the issue of are we understanding as a police department what our operational needs are clearly. There are lots of ways that operators can communicate concerns. I have a list of them. I'm not going to read that list to you, but sometimes it just takes conversations. So I've asked the police chief and the head of our chief operating officer to meet on a weekly basis. Part of those meetings are going to include visits with operators and ride-alongs with operators has already began. I think that the chief is going to be spending time at the Haywood Garage tomorrow. So these issues of unsheltered homelessness have created significant complications in the middle of the night as we transition service, and we're trying to address those concerns in the best way that we can.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome back to the frying pan, Mr. Zelli, Chair Zelli. We have some experience in transportation, of course. You left us for a while, and now you're back. And welcome back. And thank you for taking this issue very seriously. But I just have to remind everyone that this is not a new issue. It's been around for quite a while. We've been talking about safety and security on the light rail system and the transit system in general for quite some time. Instead of getting better, it's been getting worse, frankly. I'm not exactly sure why, but that is apparently what's been happening. Everyone who uses the train deserves to feel safe when they're on the train. Even the people that don't pay their fares should still feel safe. They shouldn't feel like they're taking their life in their own hands just by utilizing the system. And I agree with you 100%. This is not targeted at any population. This is targeted at a safe, secure environment on our system so that people will, can, and do use it. That's what we're building it for. That's what we built it for. We're investing another $2 billion. That's a big number in my book to extend the Green Line. And I think it's imperative that we get things in better working order in time for the opening of that Green Line so that we attract lots of riders of all sorts. It shouldn't be, it's not focused on any population. It's focused on a system that runs well and safely. With the testimony we heard last week from the operators was very poignant, in fact, surprising. And I think it's really important that we remember that the operator's job is to run that train. When I look at the statistics, it's not just statistics involving what's happening on the cars. It's also the number of accidents we've had on the line. Now, part of that is designed into our system because of the way it was laid out in the first place. But the bottom line there is the operator's job is to run the train and run it safely. And their energy and their attention should be focused on that job. Not focused on what's happening in the car behind them. Really important. Mr. Koistra, I know that we've made a major change a few months ago by shutting down the system for part of the night. Can you give us a little more information on what impact that's had on the system?
Mr. Koistra.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, we did some months ago shut down the system primarily between 2 and 4. The times are more specific in that a.m. And the impact that has had is allowed us to do significant both routine and other maintenance on the rail lines without having the tracks be live. And in the past, we used to have to set up barriers, and it was time-consuming and it was inefficient, and we felt it was unsafe for our employees. And we've been taking advantage of by making scheduled maintenance during those hours, and it's all scheduled out each night and each day to take full advantage of those hours. With respect to passenger, we do not see an impact on passengers who were using our service as destination riders. Certainly, it requires passengers who are using our service as shelter to go off board, and as we've talked about, the trains need to be cleared for that to happen. We've provided a bus primarily for out of our concern for destination riders that would provide service between the hour and during the hours that the rail was shut down, and that bus now is primarily providing transit to people using transit as shelter is what we've observed out of it. I'm being really straight with you on that. So what we're seeing by and large during the last hours of our service. And during the bus replacement service that we provide, we're by and large transporting people who are using transit and choosing to use transit shelter or using transit shelter because they have no other place to go.
Representative Torkelson.
Just a quick follow-up, Mr. Chair,
sure,
and then
of course.
I'll allow others to ask their questions. But are you happy with that selection of that particular time period and the length of time involved in shutting down the light rail during those 2 hours at night?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Representative Kreisler. Torkelson, I'm glad that we were able to shut the train down those 2 hours a night because we have been taking full advantage of the maintenance. I think that whether there needs to be more hours or not is an issue that we haven't pursued and haven't studied and we haven't looked at as to whether that would additionally benefit our maintenance interests. So I'm not prepared to answer that question right now. I am trying to give you the information that you've asked for with respect to what kind of service and who our customers are at those times of the night.
Thank you very much. I could go on, but Mr. No. Chair, there's others that have questions, and I know this isn't the last day we're going to spend looking at this issue. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I appreciate your questions, Representative Torkelson. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one comment about the fare evasion issue to set the context. From a few years ago, probably even before you were at MnDOT, we actually did a study that compared fare evasion on MnPass lanes and fare evasion on Metro Transit. And the finding of that study was that there was far more fare evasion on the MnPass lanes than on transit. Coincidentally, the MnDOT was in my office this morning for their pre-session briefing. And I revisited that issue, and I'm told that MnDOT also now is working more vigorously on fare evasion and determining what technologies are available to them and so forth. But that comparison I recall with some interest a few years ago. To the police chief, and maybe you're testifying later, I'm not sure, but you know, as we talk about this issue of safety, what I'm struck by is you don't experience this in isolation. And so I'm sort of hoping that at some point we also hear what partnership you're inviting from cities and counties, and I would say specifically Minneapolis and St. Paul and Ramsey and Hennepin, because these issues are so interrelated, including housing and homelessness and public safety, because, I mean, they just all connect with one another. But I don't think you can solve your issue without a really strong partnership where everybody is part of the solution.
And through the chair.
Chief Frizzell.
Thank you. I like to say that I'm very excited by the interagency cooperation that we're receiving, specifically from some of the major police chiefs in Minneapolis, St. Paul, the inner suburbs. We speak almost daily on how we can deconflict and help each other with the multitude of different issues that we face throughout the 7 counties and 85 communities. So I'm very happy with that. And it's even growing further as we look forward to, as of yesterday, we're to about 3 years before the Southwest line hits. And we're already into working groups and conversations with the police chiefs from Eden Prairie, Hopkins, St. Louis Park, Orono, and Minnetonka. So we're talking about various items from safety by environmental design, how to, again, develop mutual aid operations and to help each other in the event that there are shortages across the system. So I'm glad to report that that is indeed happening.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. And Chief Frizzell, if you could just identify your name and title for the record.
Through the chair, Chief Eddie Frizzell, F-R-I-Z-E-L-L, Metro Transit Police Department.
Thank you. Members, I've got four more member questions, and I think we can go till around 10 to 2, and then we will have some public testimony at that point. Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wanted to share an experience that we are having where Representative Cagle and I live, and that is in Fridley. And, well, Spring Lake Park, Fridley, New Brighton, whatever. And so what we've learned is that when the policy changed the overnight trains, that it displaced people to other places. And up on 85th and University, where we're having major deaths of pedestrians, we toured there with our committee the other day, that people are, have been, that are home, experiencing homelessness are now living up in that area, home, you know, without a home,
right.
And it's creating other problems, and people are actually getting killed on the roadway because of it. Do you have any comments about that?
Mr. Chair,
Giselli.
Bernardi, this is an important point that homelessness is pervasive in our entire metro, in fact, throughout the state of Minnesota. And I have some experience as MnDOT commissioner. I think there was probably, to me, one of the most poignant times was meeting with Governor Dayton and Mayor Fry, just the three of us, and I rolled out a map of just the metro area MnDOT properties. And we were specifically talking about the Hiawatha Cedar encampments, and which was of great concern and very visible. And rolling out that map, I showed there's 180 other encampments throughout MnDOT property, underneath bridge abutments, on our right-of-ways, in our midst, and often not visible. And that we should always keep in mind that while we're talking about one issue, it is everywhere. And I think that to get our minds around the fact that where the unsheltered are living in, which is why it's important to have these point-in-time counts, because we believe the data is showing it's getting worse in Minnesota, and that that's part of the reason that we need to be thinking about all these layers of government and social services and civic leaders to coming together to address an issue where that we're closing our train at 2 doesn't that means people have to go somewhere, even our own buses. So that's what makes this a very complex issue, and it needs a complex solution.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Koester, do
Mr.
you
Chair,
want
to? Chair, I would just add that from an operations perspective, that my concern as general manager is that there's an expectation that transit provide shelter to homeless. And I've spent 20 years of my career before coming to the Met Council and coming to this position at the Department of Human Services, so I care deeply about these sorts of issues. But providing services, using transit as shelter, is not benefiting people who are homeless, and it certainly isn't benefiting our service. That's easy to say. We have no restrooms. We have no running water. We're not equipped to provide mental health services and chemical addiction services that many of these people require. These individuals shouldn't be put on the street, and these individuals shouldn't be left to use transit as their homes. There needs to be, this is where we need the partnership of both local social services, and we do have that, and we're working with them, and we need the partnership with the legislative body as well, because we have, we can count them. There's a count that went on. If we can count them, we should be able to serve them. And serving them on transit is not the appropriate place for it. They're displaced on transit. I don't believe transit displaces them when we shut down for maintenance, those maintenance hours. But the bottom line, who's displacing who, the bottom line is services are needed. And they're not available right now. And that's the solution. That's the ultimate solution to unsheltered homeless on transit, is get services available to individuals who have serious mental health and chemical addiction issues, who have no homes and need a place to live, and need a service design that addresses those core issues.
Thank you. So members, again, I have four people on the list. I think we're just going to not take any additional members. We have Representatives Kosnick, O'Driscoll, Mason, and Runbeck. If you can get your questions in, and we'll keep the questions crisp and the answers crisp so we can get the public testimony. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will try to be crisp for you. I appreciate the three of you being here, and I understand that you are in sort of new roles at the Met Council. But kind of looking at this, as Representative Torkelson said, this is something that we've talked about for a number of years, and so while we difficult for you in your newer positions to kind of come in and change it, I appreciate the fact that you're highlighting it, taking it seriously, listening to the elevation of this issue that we've been fighting for and bringing forth. But I still think that there's, you know, kind of a culture of crime tolerance that was built within Metro Transit, and I'm glad to see a shift in that. yesterday in your press conference, you talked about some of the issues in our community spilling into transit, where I kind of question that a little bit, because I think that culture that was built to tolerate different things happening that are well documented in our previous committee hearings, those behavior issues and crimes, has been tolerated, and that's why it continues to come and kind of multiply. Is something that I think some of the ideas that you brought forth yesterday and shared today, Mr. Kustra, are I would agree with, and I'm glad to see. Additionally, I do your comments yesterday that this will require collaboration from the entire region. I want to just acknowledge that we as the legislature and our side are here to help solve this issue with you and with our members. But I do want to point out that the community and the region, the taxpayers, are contributing to a successful transit system, or what should be a successful transit system. The motor vehicle sales tax, increased sales taxes in Hennepin and Ramsey County, and the economic development that's occurred, according to your records, because of building these lines. Those specific communities that these lines are running through have benefited from the region collectively already, and the taxpayers expect to be able to have a top-class transit system without fear of being victimized. And so we'll be working on putting the finishing touches on our proposals, but just be aware, we've talked about one-time funding in a couple of the other committees, but the taxpayers are already paying significantly to establish this program, this transit system, and that I think we need to take a look at current revenues that are within the system, millions and billions of dollars, and it's not too much to ask that as an operational expense, security in the transit system is addressed and prioritized. So I appreciate that you are taking it seriously, and we look forward to working with you to continue to resolve and ultimately, how we pay for it is where I think the rub's going to be.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Kosnick.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kosnick.
Chair Zelli.
Quickly, thank you for your comments. We accept our role, and we take that very seriously. I think that prioritizing is both resources of finance. It's a resource of attitude. It's a resource of communication. But there's nothing I know from my bus history and operational history, there's nothing more unsafe than an undercapitalized system. So we need the resources because taxpayers deserve it, they expect it, and we need it delivered.
Thank you, Chair Zelli. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will make my questions as crisp as the day is outside.
Yes.
And I can't control the responses from the testifiers, though. So very first question is, there was testimony today from one of the testifiers indicating that there's a shortage of bus drivers or operators on the bus side of the house, if I can use that term, and that they're going to be shifting some of those savings over to try to solve the challenge that we experience in the train side. My question is, why are we unable to fill those positions on the bus operating side? It seems like we're kind of shifting money from one problem to another. We haven't taken care of the original problem of not being able to hire enough operators on the bus side.
Mr. Koistra.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I'll say just very quickly that we've done, we've implemented a number of strategies. The primary reason that it's difficult to hire operators is that we have a very competitive labor market right now. Other bus companies and other similar companies are having the same issues that we're having. We have to when they come to work for Metro Transit, they have to begin as part-time, is the way that our labor contract is constructed. But we held a one-day event recently, and that generated, I'm told, 500 applicants. So we're feeling really hopeful. I'll just mention really quickly that we're trying to address this is, how do we attract more people to apply? How do we make training easier and more effective in terms of getting their licensing? And we're also looking about how do we retain people, because we have a number of retirements and we need to reduce turnover. So we're looking at it from all areas, and we're hopeful we're getting this solved. It's really important for our reliability. Thank you for asking the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One other quick question. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. There are some bills that have been introduced this session in the legislature to decriminalize use of marijuana. Would the decriminalization and use of marijuana increase, decrease, or be neutral in your enforcement and security issues on public transit?
Through the chair, Representative Driscoll. We feel that right now the state statutes and currently within the state, the use of marijuana is illegal. And if you have upwards of 49 grams, it becomes felony level. And we are dictated to, by, again, state statute, to carry out our police actions. And until such time that it's either legalized and or we're told not to do it through the statute, then we will enforce it.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Chief, to that point, if the statute does change and the thresholds become lower and it becomes more of the recreational or consumed like alcohol or other kinds of things, does that help or hinder your ability to provide safety in this environment or on other public transit systems?
Mr.
Mr. Chair, Representative, and I'm just going to mention that right now, you know, smoking cigarettes is legal, and it's our obligation to enforce that on our transit system as well. So whether it's smoking marijuana is legal or smoking cigarettes is legal or it's illegal, when it occurs on the bus, it's not legal. And when it occurs on the train, it's not legal. And we're going to have to address that like we address all the other code of conduct issues that we're trying to step up and address.
Thank you. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like a little bit more clarification about the security, particularly the police, because we have the transit police, we have the city police, so when you're talking about police, it would be helpful to know. I mean, you've got the cameras, so if there's somebody seeing the camera, there's a problem, and the police are sent, who is it? The transit police that are automatically come there, and I think the comment was made that rarely do the police get there in time to deal with the person that is the perpetrator at any particular time, because the trains, my understanding, are moving. So how is it possible for any policeman to catch up?
And through the chair, Representative, thank you very much. That's a very astute question. Our neighborhoods or communities are very fluid through 7 counties and 85 communities. So we have to react to the information that we receive. Although we are proactive with plainclothes officers that it could be on any bus, train, or light rail system at any given time, we have to rely upon the dispatch portion. If it's on our jurisdictional properties, we have jurisdiction for that. And as was stated earlier, it's 7 counties. So we get there as quickly as we can. But that's what makes real-time information center cameras that much more effective, because we can get dispatched with probable cause already developed by exacting descriptions of the activities and descriptions of the individual at this particular event. They don't have to stop the vehicles. We can call in officers to that immediate spot, and once we get that instituted, we expect that response times will go down, because again, we'll be able to know exactly the location, the activity, and the person that's conducting that.
Thank you very much. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment and then a question. So the goal, and this is somewhat to the bill, but the goal of a 10% fare check just seems to me like it's really not enough of a reinforcement schedule, you know, to try to change the system. So my concern is that you'd actually be, you'd have a culture of fare evasion, trying to evade the inspector, the fare checker, and just, getting to a position where the free fare or no fare is pretty much accepted. It just doesn't seem to be quite enough reinforcement, so that's a comment. But at least to the question on the whole issue of a different type of a door, like an optical scanning sort of a door that allows the ticket to be read before a person can enter the train or the train primarily. But I know that European trains use such an optical scanning door, so that they're they're used to the idea that fares pay 100% of the cost and you don't get on the train unless you've actually got a ticket. And it seems to me, yeah, it's probably costly, but it might be very worthwhile. Just wondering if that's come up for discussion and if it's anything you're considering.
Chair Zelli.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Runbeck. I think to clarify the current those that are percentage of those not paying fares is roughly around 20%, you think? And okay, we want to have at least an immediate goal, which would be better, is to cut that in half. That's where the 10% comes. So it needs a lot more eyes and ears. We want to have more people checking throughout the system. So that is part of the idea to get beyond just Metro Transit police officers checking, but to have even others who can do it if it's an administrative offense, more like the MinPass offense or the parking ticket or a parking meter, have others who are being able to give citations. So the idea is to actually lean into the enforcement, spread it much more widely, and as you say, have more checking. Now we're not doing an adequate job now. So our goal is to be, in the near term, is to reduce the offense to 10% and ultimately more than that. The idea that technology, which is evolving, certainly in Europe and other models, is something we should be completely open to. I mean, whether it's physical barriers, which is very difficult because that's not how the system was designed, but if there's opportunities for new technology, which is emerging every year, I think the idea, as we discussed and as we understand through Representative Torkelson's proposed bill, is to study those best practices, and we would be open to whatever that might lead us.
Thank you, Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to take exception with the notion that the Met Council winks at his never taken the fare enforcement seriously. Certainly on the 8 years I spent on the Met Council, my recollection is that the fare evasion rates were actually less than 10%. But while we express concerns as members sometimes about the equitable enforcement, we never had a policy of turning a blind eye to it.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much to our panel of Met Council and Metro Transit leaders. And to members for your insightful questions. We are going to have a very brief overview of House File 3085 today. We're not moving it today. We're hearing testimony from the Met Council and the public. As I said, we will hear this, and within the next 2 weeks, we'll have a full, vigorous committee debate and vote on it. But I would like to have Representative Tacky just very briefly outline the bill, and then if Ms. McGarity, Mr. Weinhagen, and Ms. Watson can come forward, then we'll go directly into your testimony. Representative Tapke, Vice Chair Tapke.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. It has been my honor to work on House File 3085 over the course of the last several months to get the bill where we're at today. And as we said earlier, we just got, even though we pre-filed the bill, we just got the fiscal note within an hour or so ago. And so we will not be able to discuss that in depth today, but we all believe that we have a need to have a safe and welcoming transit system for all Minnesotans, especially those who often use the transit system and who are transit dependent folks. And so what this bill does is it augments the work that's already being done at Met Council. So I was really happy to have the three gentlemen here today to talk through that as to where it's going and what all is happening within safety and experience of using transit today in the metro. And so with this bill, what it will do is two things. It will create a transit ambassador program. And so with that transit ambassador program, we will have additional unarmed, uniformed folks who will be working through the transit system. So as Representative Kosnick was talking about earlier, is that this has been an issue for a while that people have been talking about and concerned about. And what the Transit Ambassador Program will do is will help add more unarmed uniform folks to really help with the culture and making sure that we are going in the right direction for a safe and usable transit system today. So we're working on that. And in order to get that done and in order to help with fare evasion and possibly other issues, we will be taking and moving the fare evasion from something that's equitable with a DUI or with physical assault or with property theft and changing it to something that is more equitable with a parking ticket to have civic administrative citations be used to increase the amount of people who are paying their fares and make sure that we're checking more folks.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair Tapke. And then again, just for members, this is for informational purposes. When we take up this bill, we'll have a full discussion of the fiscal piece, the policy piece, and you know, we'll have a motion at that point.
Mr. Chair, I forgot one thing.
Okay, Vice Chair Tapke, one thing, and then we've got to get to that public testimony.
Yes, that was what I was going to say. Is that we've been it's been really great to work with a lot of transit advocate folks and a lot of folks who a lot of them are here today. So thank you everyone for coming here to talk about the bill and for all the folks who are here to testify on it. I really appreciate everyone's support and working on this together.
So thank you. So we have seven people that have signed up. We'll try to get to all of you today, but please be brief. And we, again, will have a more robust discussion at a later date on this as well. Ms. McGarrity, you're first on the list.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein and committee members. My name is Finn McGarrity. I'm an organizer with Move Minnesota. We're a local nonprofit that works to advance sustainable and equitable forms of transportation. Through advocacy, education, and community engagement, Move Minnesota is working to ensure that every community has choices for getting around. We are guided by a vision to create an equitable transportation system that puts people first. It is because of that principle of equity that we support House File 3085. House File 3085 is a common sense statewide proposal that moves away from punitive enforcement to an ambassador program that works to address the underlying systematic problems at the heart of non-payment of fares. By connecting folks to the TAP program, support for homelessness, and other resources, we are ensuring that folks using our transit system are being treated fairly, especially if they are facing some of life's most challenging circumstances. As it has been stated today, the current penalties for an inability to pay a $2 fare include a criminal misdemeanor and a fine of $180. That misdemeanor is equivalent to property theft of $500 or an assault. A misdemeanor and a nearly $180 fine are an egregious punishment for the non-payment of a $2 fare. Criminal justice reform is gaining bipartisan traction across the country. As a society, we are coming to terms with the decades of harms and inefficacies that have been perpetuated through failed tough-on-crime policies that have disproportionately affected communities of color and low-income people. Metro Transit's policy of fare enforcement is costly, and as Metro Transit's own data shows, the citations and arrests under the current system have disproportionately been enforced on people of color. It wasn't that long ago in my own life that I was working a low-wage job, and after I paid my rent and my bills, I still had to figure out how to stretch $26 10 days until my next payday. And I also had to both eat and catch the train to work. Folks having to face that decision today are often in tougher circumstances than I was, and no one should have to face a criminal penalty as a result. I'm grateful I didn't have to. Access to an equitable and sustainable transit are a pillar of connected communities, a resilient climate, and a thriving workforce. Transit is what connects us. House File 3085 lays forward a common sense proposal that does not further criminalize poverty, but takes an important step in ensuring that transit systems both in our metro region and across the state are welcome to all and work for all. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. McGarrity. Questions? Thank you. Our next testifier is Mr. Jonathan Weinhagen from the Minneapolis Chamber of Commerce. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Chair Hornstein, members of the committee. Thank you for having me today. Jonathan Weinhagen, President and CEO of the Minneapolis Regional Chamber of Commerce. We represent about 1,500 companies employing hundreds of thousands of workers across the Minneapolis-St. Paul region. For the health and well-being of the Twin Cities and our region's economy, everybody needs to feel safe and be safe. We've certainly heard that message loud and clear today. Livability and public safety are issues that I hear every single day from employers and business leaders across the region. I'm here to support House File 3085 because it just makes sense. With looming workforce shortages and growing traffic congestion, employers are having a hard time attracting workers and getting their employees to work. In this already difficult environment, some employees are suffering the consequences of tickets, fines, fees, and excessive penalties. This bill reduces fare violations from misdemeanor to petty misdemeanor, as you've heard, and reduces the fine to an amount that is more affordable to someone who may already be having a hard time paying for transit. getting to work. The creation of the Transit Ambassador Program has become a national best practice and has resulted in higher fare compliance and reduced violations in other cities, cities that we compete with. Its success in other transit systems is why Met Council Chair Charlie Zelli supports this program, and it's why I'm excited to have it come to our region. This bill right-sizes the penalty for not paying a fare and creates a new tool in a multifaceted toolkit to address public safety on transit. Certainly appreciate your consideration and your time in allowing me to speak today, and I urge you to support this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Weinhagen. Our next testifier is Shannon Watson from the St. Paul Chamber of Commerce. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Shannon Watson. I'm the Director of Public Affairs for the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce, which represents businesses across the East Metro and across the region. I am here today to testify in support of this bill. The first step in solving any problem is recognizing that there is one, which is why we are highly encouraged that the Metro Transit leadership is acknowledging that there is a problem and is taking real steps to address it. The point of this bill is about more than appropriately aligning penalties and letting the punishment for fare evasion fit the crime. While revenue from fares is an essential part of the budget for Metro Transit and enforcing participation from everyone riding is a necessity, having sworn officers writing tickets, most of which, frankly, are not prosecuted and are not paid, when there are other more urgent issues they could be dealing with, is a misalignment of resources. The members I represent look at this proposal through a business lens, and they know that effective organizations deploy their resources in the most efficient way. Creating an ambassador program does this. It frees up sworn officers to deal with more serious crimes as only they can. Ambassadors are a visible deterrent for the nuisance behaviors that degrade the transit experience for other riders, while also allowing the time and attention to emphasize more consistent fare compliance efforts. This is an opportunity to learn from and employ a best practice developed by other public transit agencies, and an opportunity to make our public transportation system experience worth of the constituents it serves. Thank you for your prompt consideration of this bill, and I would urge your support.
Thank you very much, Ms. Watson. So our next testifier is Mr. Will Schroer from East Metro Strong, and then after that, Amity Foster, and then we have a couple more after her. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Hornstein, Chair Hornstein, and members of the committee, and it's good to be back in front of you as well. I'm Will Schroer. I'm Executive Director of East Metro Strong. We're a public-private partnership of businesses, cities, and counties in the east side of the region, as you might imagine, working together to improve and expand transit. And while I am certainly speaking for my members, I also want to just observe that on a personal level, I've experienced both, and my family and kids have experienced both the fantastic service that the Metro Transit folks provide, and also some of the darker stuff that we've heard about today here. Toward the end of my remarks, I'm going to maybe add a little about how we talk about some of those problems as well. The businesses in our partnership, as you heard from my chamber colleagues, support transit investments because their employees use it to get to work every day, and because those businesses know that good transit is essential to recruiting good workers tomorrow. Of course, that only works if the transit is safe and pleasant and is perceived as safe and pleasant. We believe the transit ambassadors being proposed would substantially help with both. Our members understand that we don't use police officers to check the drivers have paid their parking meters. The police have other jobs. Nor do we think the police should be doing the work of, say, downtown ambassadors. Similarly, the proposed transit ambassadors will do a variety of jobs that we can all agree need doing and not necessarily by police. They will check fares. They will help people navigate the transit system. Our blue line is one of the most convenient connections between an airport and a downtown in the world. And we have a lot of visitors on it, and we're hoping to get a similar connection to downtown St. Paul very soon. Helping visitors figure out how to get around that system as they come visit Minneapolis and St. Paul and the whole state of Minnesota seems like a very Minnesota thing to do. And finally, as you've heard today here quite a bit, ambassadors will help people get the more serious help that they need. In doing all this, they will free the police up to do the work that we need the police to do. Thus, by funding the ambassadors, and I'm pleased to see the fiscal note on this today, we'll be helping make the experience of riding our, and I appreciate Representative Torkelson's point on this, our transit system positive for everybody. We'll have more people in the vehicles, and we'll have the police freed up to do the work that we need them to do on other things. For all of these reasons, our members, public and private, support this ambassador program and the legislation necessary to allow those ambassadors to check and issue fare violations. My conversations with many other people, both as users and as beneficiaries of the system, tell me that they, too, think that ambassadors are a pretty good idea. So finally, I know that everybody in this room wants a transit system that works and supports our economy and quality of life. Let's name and address the real problems that are preventing that from being 100% the case right now. I guess as Chair Zelli said, these problems are not necessarily unique to transit, and they certainly are not caused by transit any more than other issues in our society are caused by other places in the region as well. So let's talk about making our transit system better in the same way that we talk about making the rest of our state and region better as something that's good for everybody and as a problem that we all need to work on together. And I look forward to doing that with the members of this committee, and I thank you for your time. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mr. Schrower. Our next testifier is Amity Foster, and then after that, Sandy Beitsch, if Sandy is here.
It's hard to get up here.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Amity Foster, and I'm here today as a member of the Twin Cities Transit Rider Union. We are in full support of reclassification of fare evasion, and ultimately, we do support a fare-free transit system statewide. The penalty for not paying fares right now is more than a parking ticket, which is a similar offense. Our current penalties, I had to Google this, so if I'm wrong, it's because I don't drive and actually don't know how to find out how much I owe for a speeding ticket. But our current penalties are even more strict than for a speeding ticket. Reducing the penalty for fare evasion is the just thing to do. We also support the Transit Ambassador Program presented in this bill. Some have raised concerns over safety on public transit because of recent incidents. Creating a tone of fear can cause us to overcommit resources to policing during these spikes in crime, but there's never a push to reduce police when the crime rate drops, and this can create more inequities. We must not respond with panic. Creating an ambassador program that is community-based moves us closer to a system that is really focused on safety for all who ride, drive, and operate public transit. Reducing the penalty for fare evasion and introducing ambassadors will allow our existing police to deal with actual crimes instead of wasting thousands of hours checking fares. Over the summer, True canvassed hundreds of bus and train riders. Their concerns were clear: faster bus routes, better connections, cleanliness of shelters and buses and trains. These all can be addressed by our legislature fully funding our transit system. Addressing those concerns also makes transit safer. When you fully fund a service, you're telling the people who use it that we actually matter and that we're a priority. Here's the thing about public transit. People ride it at all points in their lives. Some people are mental health crises. Some are drunk. I've been drunk on the train. Most of us are just getting from point A to point B. I've been on the train, and I've had the drunk dude sit across from me and ramble on loudly. He's not scary. Cops don't need to be called. A transit ambassador, someone who's trained in de-escalation, who knows how to act safely, could sit there and just be the listener. I've been harassed on the train and on the street at meetings. I get the, you should smile a lot more, you'd be prettier. It can turn aggressive. You know what helps the most? When someone else turns to me and interrupts that cycle, says hi, starts a conversation. The harasser's energy dies out when they aren't given attention. It could turn aggressive, but it won't because of that intervention. As Chief Frizzell mentioned, transit is a moving community. We are a community, and we care about each other. Ambassadors will be the first in line of official support. Most of the time, people ride our buses and trains without incident. When people do have a problem, a lot of it is issues like smoking, noise, harassment. As a daily transit rider, I can tell you I've rarely felt unsafe on the bus or train, and I definitely do not feel like I am taking my life in my hands. I've seen fellow riders be harassed by the police. I've been harassed, seen people smoking. If we have a force of trained ambassadors working on de-escalation, how to handle the situations that police shouldn't be called in for, we will have a safer transit system. I think instead of 35 building up to 90 transit ambassadors, we need to really build out that system and a supportive transit community. Let's improve transit for riders, drivers, and operators, but be clear-headed and thoughtful about it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Foster. So we have Mr. Beitch and then Ryan Timlin, the president of the ATU. And so our time is limited, so Mr. Beitch, if you could keep your comments as brief as possible. And then Henry Pan will be our last speaker after Mr. Timlin.
Okay, it seems like I'm an outlier here because I actually do not support this bill. And my comments are mostly directed to Mr. Hornstein and Mr. Tapke, and due to the article that was in the Pioneer Press, and actually my letter against that has been published today. According to the Pioneer Press article, are penalties too high for transit fare evaders? Democrats will be introducing a bill that will reduce the penalty, arguing that this will result in greater compliance. Not surprisingly, and against all reason, there is no explanation of how making fare evasion less painful will miraculously accomplish this. Brad Tapke, sponsor of the bill, states that less than 3% of citations for fare evasion are paid, which, he says, puts an undue burden on the poor and court system. Paying your fare is not an undue burden. It's an obligation, and there is no reason for those citations to burden the courts. Unpaid citations would simply go to warrant, which would come to light when those fare beaters, being the paragons of society that they are, eventually come under scrutiny for other violations of the law. Frank Hornstein, who supports the bill, believes it will ensure that our transit system is equitable and serves the entire community. What, may I ask Mr. Hornstein, is inequitable about everyone paying their fare? And the last I checked, no subset of the larger community is excluded from riding public transit. Finally, the bill would include funding for hiring transit ambassadors, laypeople whose function would be to enforce payment and write citations. Considering the kind of people who those ambassadors would be dealing with, I hope the bill includes generous hospital benefits. Just wanted to make a couple of quick closing comments. The ambassadors are not the same. Like, if you try to compare them with parking enforcement, parking enforcement people do not have to confront the violators. They just copy the license plate down and issue the ticket, put the ticket on the windshield. You're going to have ambassadors who are going to actually be confronting people to try to get them to pay their fare. I see a lot of very injured ambassadors because of this. Also, you should know that and I'm sure you're aware, that Metro Transit has $1 fares for people who qualify based on income. So, you know, the people that are evading fares are not doing it, I don't think, out of great necessity. And Ms. Runbeck, you mentioned something about new technology allowing, you know, people only to scan their tickets to get into trains. I can see a lot, I think it's wonderful if we could do it, but I see a lot of problems with people piggybacking in, or the doors will open to let people out, and what stops somebody from then coming in. So, I'm not so sure that would really work.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have two more testifiers, and then we will adjourn. Ryan
Mr.
Timlin.
Chair?
Yes?
Just a point of order,
yes.
Information. So we've got one last testifier, but then the committee's not going to have time to talk about the bill?
No,
or the fiscal note?
Representative Kosnick, I don't know if you came late, but we are not taking discussion of the bill today. We will do that when we vote on the bill at a future meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And then there will also be an opportunity to talk to the author as well and go over the fiscal note. So it looks like we've got several people from the ATU, and please proceed, state your name for the committee, and after this panel. Is there a Mr. Henry Pan here? Okay, after Mr. Pan's testimony, we will adjourn. So my apologies, members, we'll go a couple minutes over time. So if you could keep your testimony to the point, we would appreciate that. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Hornstein. My name is Ryan Timlin. I'm the president of Amalgamated Transit Union Local 1005. I apologize. I wasn't planning on speaking today, so I'm dressed like I've been standing outside most of the day with the hat and everything.
We always take people that want to speak, not on the list.
Yes, so. Thank you. I just want to respond to several things that were spoken about today. It's a little bit of the bill, but also what was spoken earlier. Like we've stated before, fares is not a fares. Yes, that's an issue, but for our operators, that is not the main issue. It's fare evaders are not always the problem. In fact, some of these assaults that have happened, people have paid the fare. It is a crime element on there. It's not the homelessness. It's a crime element that's on there that needs to be addressed, and that's what our operators are concerned about. But it's just not operators. It's transit workers as a whole. Around Thanksgiving, we had a helper. A helper is an employee that helps clean up areas and works with the maintenance crews to get stuff ready so that they can go out. Mr. Koistra was mentioning some of the helper positions earlier. A helper was assaulted with somebody at Union Depot who had a shovel for no reason, just charged after him and assaulted him. He thankfully defended himself. It's popping up everywhere. It is a part of broader society. And I urge all of you to go out on the system. As a former operator, I can give you several routes where you will see it is working homeless. It is the working public. They cannot afford to pay fare, and it's broader issues in society that need to be addressed. We need more jobs out there, pay people well so that they can afford to ride the bus. It is a deeper issue for those who are not acknowledging that. You can go on the 9 line, and you can watch people get off of work and go to the homeless shelter. This is reality. Sorry, I'm getting nervous my voice is shaking, but nervous here, but these need to be addressed. And on the system, this is one system that does not have a dedicated source of funding. We live in two cities that have, the Twin Cities is ranked 8th for Fortune 500 companies. There's abundance of wealth in these cities to afford a system that people can ride. It can be accessible for all. It's just not the tax burden should be pushed onto the workers all the time. There's other sources out there, such as Fortune 500 companies, who I'm sure are evading taxes in different ways. These issues need to be addressed further for the public as well, so that the welfare of the broader community can be addressed as well. And I want that all to be put on the record from our local. I don't know if my brother and sister here have anything to add, but those were the points I wanted to be put on the record for today.
Thank you, Mr. Timlin. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Hello, my name's Honey Darling, LRT operator. Thank you, Chair and members, for letting us speak. I wanted to bring up a couple things that were mentioned earlier about the shifting funds to take care of safety issues and the shortage of drivers. Also, how this has went downhill, so far downhill, that you know, it should have been taken care of years ago. What I see at light rail, and this is not going to get me any points for speaking this, but as Mr. Timlin had mentioned, the taxpayers and the public are suffering because of this. We have approximately 50 different managers at light rail, 121 operators. To me, that's a crazy number. We have a chief of operations that created a position which is called manager of field operations and promoted his son in that position. Didn't go through proper hiring process for other people that had applied. Created another position, project manager of special projects. Any given day, I could have 50 different managers coming up and telling me that my boot's not tied properly. For 121 operators, a lot of money is being wasted on top heavy. We need to cut the fat out. It's like light rail's kind of like an institution. What goes on in there is left alone. And I'm not trying to kick at Met Council or the police or anybody, because I think that a lot of people don't understand light rail. And so they just let it go on, and they trust that the people that they hired and put in these positions are making good decisions. And what that does is, you know, they're taking quite a bit of money that's needed for transit. Over the 6 years that I've been there, that money alone in these what I call made-up positions, five senior supervisors that really I have no idea what they do, that could be enough money right there to put shields on every single bus so that way bus drivers are safe and they want to come to work. That could be putting more police officers at night. Every single weekend, Saturday and Sunday morning, I drive and have problems 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning trying to clear my train. There's only 3 or 4 trains out there at that time. So then you could take the police with this money and this resource that's wasted and put it to what's needed to help transit, help the public be safe, help the operators and the employees be safe. And then in return, you will not have to shift funds from driver shortage because you'll have people that want to come here. And it was brought up last week about the 18% of overtime. That wouldn't be an issue either. You would have people that are wanting to work, wanting to be here. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Darling. One other, okay.
Yes, sir, please.
If you could be very quick, because we're already out of time here.
My name is Ron Kamuler. I'm the second shift maintenance foreman in the Green Line Vehicle Maintenance Shop, as well as I'm on the executive board of Local 1005 representing all the maintenance folks. There's a couple issues that I think you folks have overlooked that I want to call to your attention. The signalmen, the traction power maintainer, the track maintainers are exposed not only to the dangers of their work, working in the right-of-way of the train, but when they get to their work site, it's often littered with used needles, there's human waste. Imagine you come to work and that's what you find in your office. I mean, we talk about people's dignity. We're people too. Where's the dignity for us? On February 4th, for example, there was 10 biohazards of vomit and the like on the train. The same day, there was 4 incidents of vandalism. There was incidents of drinking, partying, people pulling the emergency release on the door, which stops the train, triggers a whole nother event. Last weekend, there was 26 biohazards on the train. I think this is a health issue, not only for us doing the work, but for the entire public. What if a little kid gets on the train? He likes to root around and explore. What if he gets stuck with the needle, grabs a crack pipe, it's brittle, it shatters in his hands? We have to do better. Metro Transit attributes these things to homelessness. I tend to disagree. I think there's a criminal element out there. I go out and I see the people that are picking up the trash off the train and spend some time with them. Real quick, you can identify that our platforms are a drugstore for drug dealers. The users then get in the train as a comfortable place to ride and do their thing. I mean, that's wrong. We need, I guess, law and order.
Yep.
We have rules in society. And we have to enforce those rules. And I think if you do that, what you're going to see, we're talking about how do we fund this. What we're not talking about here is all the money that's being spent in parts, in labor for someone to clean up after these folks, these trains come out of service. You're paying skilled wages to pick up human waste. That's become the priority, not the day-to-day business of a maintenance organization. When these things stop, I think that money that you're putting needlessly towards this extra work is gonna fund a good part of your safety enforcement.
Okay. Thank you.
And I'll stop there.
Thank you. Can you state your name again and spell your last name for the record?
My name is Ron Kamuler. Last name is K-A-M-M-U-E-L-L-E-R.
Thank you. And I just personally, I want to thank all three of you. I do not drive. I ride transit every day. It's my source of transportation. So I just appreciate your work and your labor so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So members, we have one last testifier and then we'll adjourn. Mr. Henry Pan has been waiting patiently. And then before we adjourn, I'll sort of lay out Representative Kosnick, kind of where we're going from here. Mr. Pan, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
My name is Henry Pan. I am a resident of Minneapolis and an avid transit rider. I'm here to speak in favor, for the most part, of House File 3085. I used to ride the Green Line a lot because I worked at a place that was right off of the Green Line for a year. Every morning, almost every morning, I would see police officers go on board and check fares. I'm not sure how much safer that made me feel. I just didn't feel safe when I saw a cop one morning go up to a homeless guy who was hiding underneath blankets, and that cop was like trying to lift that blanket off of him, and he was clearly trying to hide from him, and that made him feel very unsafe, and that's just what very much made me feel averse to seeing more police officers on transit. I've also ridden the C line a couple times. I run a Facebook group that's very transit oriented, and there are people on that group who talk about how unsafe they feel seeing police officers check for fares. There's even a Metro Transit operator in that group who has had experience working at a group home, who wrote about de-escalating a situation between a police officer and a very inebriated homeless person for whatever reason. And so I'm not sure if having more police is a good idea, which is why I support the notion of an ambassador program. I'm from San Francisco originally. San Francisco Muni 10 years ago decriminalized fare evasion because it was overwhelming the court system. So now transit riders, if they're caught not paying their fare, in fact, the entire system is a proof of payment system. So operators don't even ask transit riders for their fare. Instead, there are groups of roving fare inspectors that rove around the system. And if the fare inspectors catches someone who don't pay their fare, they get a $125 fine. And actually, San Francisco also has a separate ambassadors program that started before the fare inspection program was put into place. Both of those are separate units. The ambassadors are part of the security unit at the SFMTA, and the fare inspectors are in the same unit as the transit operators. So that's why I support decriminalizing fare evasion, because I don't think punishing someone with jail time or a hefty fine for not paying a $2 fare, let alone a $1 fare, the punishment doesn't fit the crime. This is why I support it. One thing I will note that I really would like to see more details in how Metro Transit does reporting to the state legislature, because I noticed that it does require a report. I would like to see some aspect of them reporting who are the race and demographics and the class of people who are being who have been caught evading fares, because I think, or like who's being targeted, who's being caught the most. Like, I think we need that data to see like how this program is working.
Thank you very much for your patience and for your testimony. Members, I apologize we went over time, but we did this bill and this issue first because I think that members on both sides of the aisles, many, many members of the public, feel very strongly about this issue. And so we will proceed with some other bills on Tuesday, and hopefully a week from today, or at the very latest early the following week, we will dedicate an entire hearing to the bill. There'll be an opportunity to ask the author questions. If members want to amend the bill, obviously we'll have discussion about that. And then it would be my intention after that hearing to move this on to, I believe, the Public Safety Committee. And members, I would encourage anyone who has bills that have to go to other committees to get those in and hearing requests made because of our short deadlines this year. So with that, members, we stand adjourned until next Tuesday. Have a great weekend.